Hey, everyone, welcome back to their Hardware News Recap for the week. And this one, Bamboo Lab makes some really awful, terrible decisions. Also, we're rehosting the software that they aggressively pursued the removal of because fuck you, Bamboo Labs. You can grab it at the link in the description below in our article titled, Fuck You, Bamboo Lab. Also, in the news, AMD projects that PC gaming is going to hit a major downturn, surprising nobody. Motherboard makers experiencing major downturns. Valve maybe prepping for the Steam Machine launch even more than they were. Last time we talked about Valve maybe prepping for the Steam Machine launch. Switch 2 prices going up, some updates to the router story, and our next big adventure has a trailer. And we got robbed. Before that, this video is brought to you by Thermaltake and the TR200WS Micro Chassis, a Micro ATX stout case. It includes an optional 5.25 bay for either a screen or 5.25 drives. The case has a highly perforated side panel, a color accent front styled like other popular cases, can fit radiators, and closed loop liquid coolers in the top, up to 360mm claimed support, and a total of 7 120mm fan mounting locations between the top, bottom, and rear of the case. Max CPU tower cooler clearance is claimed at 175mm and GPU clearance at 365mm. The chassis provides a portable, highly compatible box for your builds. Learn more at the link in the description below. All right, so first up, we have a special investigation coming up for you all where we flew all over the place and spoke to manufacturers. We were able to get them on record to talk about the downfall of the consumer electronics and PC hardware industry right now. Some of these companies, they're down 70 to 80% in revenue. The bottom has fallen out from under them. And we were able to get a lot of the companies to go on record with their revenue numbers, sales volume, profit, margin structure. It's actually insane the access we got and the information they were willing to go public with. A lot of that's because the work we did on the tariffs video last year and the black market documentary that we did last year. So we interviewed manufacturers in the US, in Taiwan, additional commentary from sources in China and Germany. And this is to learn about how some of them are facing those massive declines in sales and what they're planning to do about it. I think after speaking to a bunch of companies that some of the companies in this space, in the PC hardware DIY enthusiast space, are not going to survive this current downturn. I don't know who it's going to be, who makes it out, who doesn't, but it looks bad. Like, it actually looks really bad. A lot of people that you all have grown familiar with through the channel from interviews over the years, they don't work at these companies anymore because they've been laid off. So anyway, it's a big investigation. It's coming up sometime in the next week or two. And we're excited to bring it to you because the information that's in there is pretty wild. Here is the trailer to look at what's coming up. It gets pretty interesting. This investigation into the PC industry's collapse saw a sudden and unexpected change in course.
We got robbed in San Francisco.
Holy shit. Your car?
Yeah, oh, you got bipped.
You told them we're filming, I guess, or what did you tell them about our situation?
So I said, you know, we're purposely going to be going into an area that's dangerous, and he's purposely going to be doing it at a time that is the most dangerous and most active because he wants to try to find out more information about the whole, you know, black market ecosystem.
So we'll keep line of sight and keep you in sight.
Even with half our shit getting stolen, the thieves didn't take the camera bags, so we still got our story.
And now we're going over to Cooler Master.
All this was supposed to digest last year, like everyone had POs and then they cancel everything. Everybody canceled.
Are you talking about like retailers or distributors?
Everything,
or?
Everyone. Yeah, okay. Like they essentially, like, it's like some product was selling like 4,000 or 5,000 units a month. Mm-hmm. Now it's like 500, 600.
Wow, okay.
It's like
one-tenth.
But this is an industry-wide problem, and Cooler Master got us access to industry-wide data, not just their own sales figures, but figures for everybody.
This year, year-to-date, it's at almost 33 million, but a drop of 26% in revenue from power supply. Next one is air cooling. Traffic dropped by almost 40%. And you can see retail sales, like I mentioned, it dropped a lot, 48%. Liquid cooling. So you can see the trend here that liquid cooling about 40% drop in revenue. So Case, you can see that total sales revenue dropped by 41%.
We contacted famed case designer Rob Teller of Height to learn if their situation was any better, but we quickly learned they're already downsizing.
In a sense, AI took your job.
Yeah.
But not because
AI has actually done your job.
No, it took it because it's basically taking consumer computers as an appliance. Mm. The consumer PC industry as we've known it our entire lives, that's gone. Mm. Like, it's gone. Every company that I have worked with, worked against, or worked for is all struggling, and that's an understatement. Sales have collapsed more than 70% year over year. Mm. We're so far gone that the consumers aren't buying the stuff anymore. Mm-hmm. And that means that the market, you know, in its kind of extremely mature sense, is done.
When we spoke with many of these companies last year, they opened up the books more than ever to talk about how the chaotic daily changes in tariffs impacted their businesses. Now, they're dealing with an onslaught of new challenges. RAM prices are the obvious, but the industry and the PC building and PC DIY hobbies face external pressures too.
I believe that there's a reason we went to war, and I believe at the end of the war, Middle East will be more stable than before. And so if we were there, if we were considering it before, we should absolutely be considering it after. And so I'm 100% in on that.
You know, with the Strait of Hormuz closure, are you seeing ripples from that at all in freight?
Gas prices right now are crazy, especially in California, right? A shipment that would cost us $400 to ship to the East Coast increased about 10 to 20% now because of diesel going up.
Oh, wow.
I have outbound cargo from LA going into Saudi Arabia.
Okay.
Usually a flight from LA to Saudi Arabia is about 24 hours. Mm-hmm. That one day transit time has turned into 3 weeks.
Good morning. Nice to see you again.
Our January decline from December for us and the market is around 15%. And down the line through February, our decline is 30% versus what we think the market is at 35%. And for March is 35% for us and 30% for the market, and continuously on a 4-month decline into April, 40% for the market and 38% to us.
What do you think is causing this mostly?
I think there's different factors, but I do think RAM prices and storage prices and component costs are a big factor in playing in the volume of the case market. Not a lot of people are upgrading their PCs. Is the overall TAM, we see it shrinking.
Total addressable market.
Yes, yeah. Like people aren't building PCs anymore, how we see it. And we don't see a point of recovery right now, or we don't see a light at the end of the tunnel right now. We don't see the bottom. And that's what's kind of the uncertainty here. What is that recovery? What is that catapult that's going to jumpstart this again? Used to, you had things to look forward to.
A lot of huge companies, like billion-dollar valued mm-hmm. companies, those guys are really making a lot right now. And like a lot of people that you and I deal with, they're struggling.
You'll want to stay tuned for all that as usual. We're going to do some kind of special promotion on the GN store for it. I'm not sure what it'll be yet. It might be more Puck Gamers Nexus because that seems suitable. But stay tuned for all that. And let's jump into the related topic, which is a downfall for sales for AMD CPUs going into the second half of this year for gaming and GPUs and motherboard manufacturers, which is related. Now, with AMD and Intel, obviously, you got two options for CPUs. So any drop for them in sales, you're going to see that disproportionately affect some of their partners or just companies that make things related to computer building, like cases and coolers, because you have two competitors for the one thing, the CPU or the GPU, kind of three. But then for cases, you might have over a dozen. And so those over a dozen, they're going to see this impact a lot worse. AMD was initially up this year for the first quarter. It expects a turn for the worse for the rest of the year in gaming. AMD posted its quarterly earnings last week. Overall, AMD's up. The company noted that its data center revenue was up 57% year over year. Client and gaming for first quarter was up 23% year over year, citing X3D sales in the audio call. And gaming was up 11% year over year, citing RX 9000 sales in the audio call we listened to. However, AMD noted it anticipates a 20% gaming revenue decline in the second half of the year. And Lisa Su had this to say.
In gaming, revenue increased 11% year over year to $720 million. Semi-custom revenue declined year over year, as expected at this stage of the console cycle, while engagements with customers on next-generation platforms remain strong. Similar to the PC market, we believe that second-half demand in gaming will be impacted by higher memory and component costs, and we are planning the business accordingly.
Andy was up for first quarter for gaming revenue, and it mostly attributed that in the call to RX 9000 series GPU sales. The company is anticipating a major decline, though, in gaming revenue for the rest of the year. A 20% dive is massive, obviously, and not as bad as the rest of the industry seen, because the rest of the industry has more competitors, and they rely on the silicon products to sell in order to sell the stuff they make. But 20% is still a pretty big dive. As a separate note, AMD has also changed its staffing strategy, I guess you could call it, for consumer-facing products. So we have now seen multiple people within AMD move out of consumer-facing roles, like consumer gaming products and representing them or working on them, into business unit roles, which maybe is an indication of what AMD is predicting for the future, where they're taking people away from anything facing the public and hiding them over in AI land where I guess all the money is. AMD focused its announcements on the expected. In the face of a projected decline of gaming revenue, the company proudly announced its 6-gigawatt AMD Instinct GPU deployment with Meta, calling it a leading customer. It also announced partnerships with Amazon AWS, Google Cloud, Microsoft Azure, and Tencent. AMD's other highlights almost entirely include business or enterprise arrangements, mostly including data center projects. As for the motherboard makers related to this, they are also predictably down. So CPU sales will plunge into the end of the year for gaming. Motherboard sales will follow. However, again, because there's more motherboard makers than CPU makers, some of them are going to feel that impact more than others. So this is also part of our upcoming investigation into all this stuff. But Digitimes Taiwan ran a piece about the collapse of motherboard shipments in the past week. Digitimes writes via machine translation that Asus, MSI, Gigabyte, and ASRock are all either anticipating or already experiencing a year-over-year decline, with the worst being ASRock at 30% and Gigabyte and MSI both looking at 25%. Digitimes notes that the manufacturing cost increase has worsened this, with materials costs seeing a 15 to 30% rise that has triggered subsequent retail increases worsening demand. Now, our own numbers that we've collected for the upcoming piece I've been mentioning match these in some categories are worse. Depends what company you talk to and if you look at a subcategory of their boards. We may also be seeing a demand collapse type of situation where the price has skyrocketed to such a point, including and especially the memory and the storage, that consumers completely backed off any kind of purchasing, which is what we've been talking about, and which is the obvious conclusion of what happens when people can't buy stuff anymore. It gets to a point where it's so high, there's no one in the market for it, and then the price might, not of RAM, but of things like GPUs, which we'll get into, starts to fall out from under it. And even when it falls out from under it, consumers are like, no, fuck that, I've moved on, I'm doing something else with my money and time, or I'm just saving it, because shit looks pretty bad right now. Anyway, one of our longtime viewers, shout out to Liquid Paper, tipped us off to a story that led us to this WeChat post from a ChannelGate in China. Via machine translation, the post says, quote, however, for channel partners and retailers, this price point has nearly, or in some cases actually, dipped below their own procurement costs. This creates a classic instance of inverted pricing where merchants not only fail to generate a profit on each card sold, but may actually face financial losses, end quote. The post also noted that the RX 9060 XT 8GB model's, quote, price point is clearly insufficient to cover associated costs, placing an undeniable financial strain on the distribution channels, end quote. They also wrote that the 9070 XT is collapsing in price, writing that, quote, every sale equals a loss, end quote, for AMD GPUs, and calling AMD's position arrogant and alienating of its distributors. The post closes out by citing NVIDIA's recent regain of market share in GPUs, which the post anticipates will increase with the situation. Couple things here for the every sale equals a loss. They're talking about partners of AMD, so like distribution channels, hence ChannelGate, not AMD itself. Likewise, when you look at the GPU pricing in, for example, the US, which obviously we're the most familiar with, it hasn't really changed that much. So this seems to be a somewhat unique situation to distribution in China, although maybe it will expand from there. It just kind of depends on how the rest of the world fares with the market. In the West, we commonly would refer to what is being described in this WeChat post as demand destruction As Wikipedia writes, quote, in economics, demand destruction refers to a permanent or sustained decline in the demand for a certain good in response to persistent high prices or limited supply. Because of persistent high prices, consumers may decide that it's not worth purchasing as much of that good or seek out alternatives as substitutes, end quote. And this is really just a continuation of what we've been covering for months now, where the situation gets worse for consumers as the mega corporations realize that they are in a post-consumer economy for now. We'll see how long that can endure. But for now, they don't need you. Companies like the motherboard makers, the case cooler makers, they still need customers. But the companies that actually control them through the existence of things you can put in those products in the consumer space, like AMD, NVIDIA, Intel, Micron, Samsung, SK Hynix, so forth, they don't need customers as normal people. They just need business customers. It's all B2B, and they can kind of keep it inflated as long as there's someone else to boost the share value, I guess. And then ultimately, it seems that the goal would be once you kind of run out of B2B money to pump in a circle, you go seek out government handouts to continue to inflate your bubble that you've created, as we've covered in some of the recent NVIDIA and AMD pieces. Or you try to get consumers back in through things like subscription services. But we've been talking about that for a while now. Anyway, you'll want to check back for the multi-hour investigation into this exact situation in the coming weeks because related. So that's a good lead into it for not good news. Up next, Bamboo Lab is legally threatening a software developer who's made a tool called Orca Slicer-Bamboo Lab. Slicers are a software solution for translating 3D models into printable files for 3D printers. And Orca Slicer Bamboo Lab is one of those. Bamboo Lab is threatening the developer, though, with what we think is an abuse of copyright law. And we have a full standalone piece we're actually working on for GNCA that we'll publish as a deep dive into some of Bamboo Lab's anti-consumer behaviors here. But we're going to cover also a brief version of it in Hardware News here. But you'll want to check on GNCA's full separate video once we have that done. We're still in the researching phase for that. Anyway, to get into the basics here, the developer, Pavel, posted on GitHub to say that Bamboo Lab accused him of reverse engineering their software and accused him of impersonating Bamboo Lab. Quote, in that statement, Bamboo Lab described the modification as something that injected falsified identity metadata, pretended to be the official Bamboo Studio client, crosses into impersonation, was bypassing a technical limitation. Pause the quote there for a moment. That is going to be the key sentence here for copyright section 1201, which we spoke to Lewis Rossman about for this story as well. Quote continues from Pavel, sort of summarizing Bamboo Lab, could create infrastructure problems comparable to service overload caused by unauthorized traffic. They also refused my request to publish the full correspondence. Instead, they published a one-sided public statement where I cannot reply directly. In practice, this presents me to the public as someone bypassing security, impersonating their client, and creating a risk to their infrastructure. I reject that characterization, end quote. Just to jump in, as far as they reject the option to publish the correspondence, fuck all of that. Pavel, I just emailed him too, so we'll talk about this. But my view on that is like, if you email me, then all bets are off. Like, there's no agreement. I received an email uninvited, especially if it's a copyright claim of some kind. It's like, fuck you. I'll publish what I want. Thanks. But anyway, Pavel's trying to, I get it. He's the smaller guy here, just a third-party developer trying to do a nice thing for the community, and Bamboo Lab decides to be assholes. So, understandable in some way. Pavel goes on to describe the code used in the slicer, defends his development, and also presents AGPL code, which is part of the GNU General Public License open source software licensing. From everything we've seen, Pavel's code is a legal third-party tool that's covered under open source software licensing, and in no way has he impersonated Bamboo Lab or presented as them at any point, from what we can tell. But we're not lawyers, so you don't have to take our word for it. There is a lawyer, though, who's commented on this. You maybe take his word for it. Copyright attorney and YouTuber Leonard French, who's an attorney and who also covered our Bloomberg situation, jumped in with his own commentary.
The picture then looks like this. Bamboo sends a cease and desist letter to a developer over an open source project while a legal mechanism is quietly taking shape that would allow any of Bamboo's own customers to walk into California State Court and demand the corresponding source code for their entire closed networking ecosystem. But you have to zoom out. because the conflict between Bamboo and Orca Slicer is not an isolated event. It is a textbook manifestation of what right to repair advocates have started calling progressive enclosure, the strategy by which manufacturers across every sector use software locks to convert one-time hardware sales into ongoing monetizable services.
In the piece, he goes on to describe a situation that, to us at least, sounds favorable for the developer and not for Bamboo if it were to go to a legal matter or a lawsuit. Friend of GN, Lewis Rossman, also jumped in.
I said that please get in touch with me so I can see what it is they said. I couldn't promise that I would help until I saw the legal notices. And I saw. Pavel was kind enough to give me an idea of what was going on. I said I wasn't going to say publicly what exactly was in there without his consent, and I'm not doing that. But what I'm going to be doing here is pledging $10,000 for the legal fees that he would have to pay if he keeps up his code and Bamboo Labs goes after him. If Bamboo Labs goes after you for keeping up your code, I am so confident in your case that I will pay the first $10,000.
And we'd like to do the same. I was just talking with Lewis about this. I've emailed Pavel. And if Bamboo Lab pursues Pavel for his code, or if the inverse happens and Pavel goes after them, then from what our research suggests, he's completely within his legal bounds to develop the software he did. I don't see any. You'd have to be pretty much only an evil corporation to see it as impersonation for what he did. And we will do the same as Lewis here. So we'd be happy to contribute $10,000 to Pavel's either legal defense or offense, I guess. I'm okay with either one. And if he needs it, I'd also be happy to connect him with our U.S.-based intellectual property attorneys who helped us successfully fight off Bloomberg when they Bloomberged us, and then Bloomberged all over the place when they didn't follow up on their claims that they made and we got reinstated. So anyway, that is available to you, Pavel, if you'd like to take it. And I've sent over an email already. But the reason that Lewis has gotten involved in this specifically is because of Section 1201. Lewis is pursuing this from an angle of fighting Code 1201 of U.S. copyright law and the DMCA, which is the, quote, circumvention of copyright protection systems, end quote, code. Bamboo appears to be trying to leverage this section of copyright law, which carries with it aggressive penalties and possible federal prison time as a maximum criminal penalty if it were to go that route. Now, we've seen some of the behind-the-scenes communications and documentation, and from what we've seen, it looks like Bamboo is basically trying to assert some circumvention of copyright protection systems, which is insane. It's like, none of this makes any sense. Lewis is also going to be hosting Orca Slicer-Bamboo Lab, and that's with Pavel's permission, with the developer's permission. And I was talking to him, and he was like, yeah, I'm going to host it so they can sue me if they don't like it. And I told Lewis, you know, I like that idea. I think we'll do the same thing. So as soon as we're able to get it hosted somewhere, I'm going to update the description and put a link to it, and you know, with the developer's permission, of course. And if Bamboo doesn't like it, then I guess they get to sue Lewis and us, and we'll see how that goes. I could use something to do. So anyway, the reason for that is because Pavel has taken his software down, which is, I think, a preventative measure out of sort of an abundance of caution. I mean, it's like one guy developing a software tool, and a big company is threatening him legally, so it makes sense. I guess we'll add a link below as soon as we're able to get it up somewhere and talk to him about it. And then, I don't know, Bamboo, if you'd like to meet in Shenzhen, I'd be happy to do it. They technically have a headquarters in California, but we'll be over in Shenzhen where they're actually based not too long from now. So the whole thing's really frustrating because Bamboo's printers are actually really good in our experience. We have very limited 3D printing experience. We started recently, and we have been impressed with the hardware. Now, that said, Bamboo has also had fire hazard issues. So I had someone from the 3D printing community email us not long ago, and it was before we were like really into trying to do 3D printing in any capacity. But he had noted that Bamboo has had fire hazard issues in the past. I'm not sure what the current status of that is. We don't really follow 3D printers too closely. We're basically consumers in 3D printers. We're not reviewers. But we just started buying printers and using them, and we've been impressed with Bamboo's newest printer's quality. So the whole thing's really frustrating. Late last year, we had just bought our first 3D printers and decided to try and join the scene. We're consumers here. Again, not reviewers of 3D printers. We're not experienced with them. So like you all, we deferred to reviewers and researched our purchases. We chose Bamboo Lab H2S machines, which we used in our Noctua 3D printed fan content. And I've been really happy with the prints, but the company's starting to remind me of NVIDIA, where they're good, but they're assholes. And in this instance, you know, Bamboo is not an NVIDIA in that there are a lot of options out there. It's not just if you need CUDA, you buy NVIDIA. I mean, it's if you need a 3D printer, there's other things you can buy still. And for us, what that means is even though we were just starting to get into the ecosystem and we had bought a bunch of Bamboo stuff, what I'm doing now is I just spent $5,000 on Prusa stuff instead, and I spoke to some Prusa staff yesterday as of filming this, actually, to understand their approach to things. From what I've heard, and you all can correct me if I'm wrong in the comments, but you know, as a consumer doing research here, my understanding is that Prusa is a lot more open and a lot less assholes. So we bought some of their stuff. We're going to evaluate it, and we'll probably start phasing Bamboo out over time, slowly, as we move Prusa in. Prusa, for me, came by recommendation of Wendell from Level 1 Tax, who seems to really like their systems, and he spoke highly of their openness. And so, for me, that's a big endorsement to hear from Wendell, and that's the direction we're going, because Bamboo's at a size right now where they're not like an NVIDIA where you have no choice. It hasn't gotten there yet. And even though us as consumers buying a couple printers is not going to have a big impact, I'd still like to contribute in not allowing it to become that way, because we don't need more NVIDIAs in different industries that just dominate them and then fuck everyone over. So that's kind of how we're handling it, where it's, you know, we've got some Bamboo printers, we'll keep using them, but we're not going to expand on that, I'll call it fleet, as we were planning to, and we're going to go a different route instead. So maybe Prusa, I don't know. If you all have recommendations to someone else, I'd be happy to buy it and try it out, and maybe we go that way. But anyway, that's not the takeaway from the key here, which the key is that Pavel has developed software, and Bamboo is, we think, abusing 1201 per Lewis Rossman to try and take things down like that software. We'd be happy to help with the defense or the offense if it comes to it for him. And in the meantime, we've got an email out, actually a couple of emails out to some people who are involved in this, and we're going to be working on a deep dive piece for GNCA. So if you'd like to see a follow-up, you can check our GNCA channel for that. I don't have an exact timeline of that yet, but we're working on it, and that'll be our next time covering this one. So up next, Chrome installing 4 gigabytes of AI slop when you install Chrome now. So for some users, with Chrome installations, there's been an additional 4 gigabyte AI model that installs alongside it. This mirrors what we've seen with AMD's Radeon software in the past year or so, where AMD, especially if you're connected to the internet during install, will have an option to install sometimes up to, I think the most we've seen is 80 gigabytes of AI model crap along with the driver, which is crazy. We're going this way. It's just burning through storage space for really no reason for most people. As far as Chrome, that privacy guy posted a story about the 4 gigabyte model installed by Chrome, claiming that a waits.bin file for Gemini Nano could be used by Chrome to, quote, power features Google has marketed under names like Help Me Write, on-device scam detection, and other AI-assisted browser functions, end quote. Snopes did additional research, finding that the model was present on some staff computers within a folder called Opt Guide on Device Model, matching that Privacy Guy's report. Snopes noted that the model does not get installed on all machines. We're not sure what the criteria is for which machines receive the model, as it seems inconsistent. Nixcraft boosted this on Twitter, noting that the model is a, quote, no consent dialogue, no opt-out UI, reinstalls itself if the user removes it manually, end quote. Snopes' research found that this was mostly true, but noted that its own testing saw the model did not reinstall itself manually if removed. Now, we also saw a report where the claim from Google, at least, is that this model will remove itself if the user is low on storage. We have not tested this or replicated it at this point, though. Increasingly, software seems to be installing local models on computers when you install the software, so this may be a thing to keep an eye out in the future. Now, especially with things like the AMD drivers, where at least when they first rolled it out, it was an opt-in function. So I think it was unchecked by default. I have to go back and check when they first launched. I don't exactly remember. But there's a checkbox. If you're connected to the internet when installing the drivers, it has an option to install sometimes tens of gigabytes of crap for an AI model. And this is something you'll want to keep an eye out for. So, I mean, for our audience, maybe not a big surprise. I would recommend doing custom installs rather than the express installs, when installing software or browsers and just carefully reading your options as always. And if they give you an option for stuff like this, remove it if you don't want it. In this case, though, it sounds like it was just kind of there, so not great. And also right now when storage is ungodly expensive along with memory, which is potentially getting used for this stuff to run in the background, it's just like driving the cost up of using your system for really no reason whatsoever. Up next, Valve's Steam Machine Prep and the Controller Queue. Valve's Steam Machine was in the news last week for potential ties to import records detailing game consoles, which we covered in the last news episode. Now, following an update to a queue ordering system to ease the purchasing funnel for the Steam controller, a Reddit user identified IDs and code matching Steam Machine and Steam Machine Plus controller bundles. Video Cards elaborates that the IDs seem to match a 512GB, 2TB, and then the same with controllers as options. This follows Valve's queue system. Valve wrote, quote, "We plan to continue replenishing stock as we get more in, but in the meantime, wanted to share changes we're making to improve the purchase experience and to limit reseller activity. Beginning May 8th at 10 a.m. Pacific, we're opening a reservation queue for the Steam controller," end quote. Up next, residents are paying billions of dollars for energy upgrades to the grid for data centers and private companies to then benefit from. A state agency in Maryland has filed a complaint with the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, known as FERC, or if you pronounce it, FERC. And the complaint says that its residents are unfairly paying for energy grid upgrades that are driven by data centers, where rather than data centers bearing the cost for this, even though they're going to be the ones causing the demand for it, it's the residents who are bearing the cost of it, and for, in some cases, largely out-of-state companies to use. The Maryland Office of People's Counsel challenged how PJM Interconnection, the nation's largest power grid operator, assigned transmission costs to Maryland and asks FERC to direct costs to where data centers are located or charge data center customers. FERC has the power to regulate the sale and transmission of electricity, natural gas, and oil across states, while PJM manages the electrical grid for 67 million people across 13 states and Washington, D.C. In a release, the Maryland agency said that, quote, PJM's rules for allocating these costs have unlawfully assigned Maryland customers responsibility for $2 billion in capital expenditures, costs that will be recovered in rates for decades and that will drive up Maryland customer bills by $1.6 billion over the next 10 years alone, end quote. The agency estimated that residential customers in Maryland would pay an extra $823 million for electricity over the next 10 years, an average of $345 per customer. In the complaint, the Office of People's Counsel said the costs are, quote, driven overwhelmingly by data center load growth outside Maryland's borders. Maryland customers neither materially caused nor meaningfully benefit from these transmission expansions, end quote. They have a point. We'd also argue that people outside of Maryland don't benefit from an expansion of data centers, except for, you know, the gigantic companies that are trying to pump money in a circle. But the dispute in Maryland shows the intricacies of the energy market at this point and how it's someone's going to have to pay for all of this, and apparently it's going to be all of us, I guess. In this case, Maryland is appealing to the federal government to reduce electricity costs for its residents. As a reminder, Lisa Su from AMD and Michael Kratsios from the U.S. government have been pushing for moves that, from what we've read, would reduce things like states' rights to managing and overseeing things like data center development in different states. So these big companies, they're driving all of this. AMD only needed you for as long as they needed you to not go out of business in the 2010s. The government has urged data center companies to pay for power grid and infrastructure upgrades through the Ratepayer Protection Pledge, but energy prices have continued to increase due to AI data center demand. More states are fighting back against the data center blight that's spreading across the U.S. Last December, Axios reported that more than 3,000 data centers are being planned or are under construction in the U.S. However, in March, the New York Times reported that $156 billion in 48 data center projects have been blocked or stalled by local opposition, based on an analysis from the Data Center Watch project. So in this instance, this is something where people are actually having an effect. So if you're not happy about stuff, and you're like, I need something to direct this energy at, data center opposition is a place where it's working. And it's because a lot of times this comes down to the town council level. I've attended a lot of town councils over the years, And I had mixed results. Like sometimes you walk away, you're just like, fucking, all right, they were paid off and they already knew before they heard from anyone what they were going to vote for. Other times they actually do stuff. Just depends on who's working there, you know, during the period. But town councils are often in charge of, or at least deeply connected with, development of projects, buildings that occur in their jurisdiction. And so this is a place where you can have a localized impact without needing to really understand lobbying or anything like that. As someone who's been to them, normally what you do is you kind of prepare your 3-minute statement or so as just someone who lives there. You research all the facts you can get. You try to present a you know, well-informed statement to a council of people who hopefully aren't completely corrupt, or at least not all of them, and then they take a vote on development. And sometimes this has small impact, like maybe they say, okay, there needs to be more of a setback, there needs to be more trees between your building and the road. Sometimes it kills the project altogether. So this is an area where there is evidence that people going to hearings is actually doing something, which is great, because there's not always something you can do. Sometimes it's just the elected officials vote on something, but you don't get to vote on it. In this case, you at least get to voice your opinion, because normally, at least in my experience, council hearings are a requirement for development, at least in most places that I've been involved in. So I can't speak for everywhere, but that's been my experience. Up next, following Sony and Microsoft's price changes for their consoles, Nintendo is next up, with the Switch 2 going up in price. Nintendo will raise the Switch 2's price in the US to $500 as of September 1st, 2026, a $50 increase. European and Canadian customers will also have to pay more. Nintendo is increasing prices for the Switch 2, Switch, and Switch Lite for Japanese customers starting on May 25th, 2026 as well. Nintendo posted a press release citing, quote, changes in market conditions, end quote, over the, quote, medium to long term, end quote, as the reason for the price hike. The Switch 2 launched in June 2025 for $450. Since then, the memory and storage prices have skyrocketed due to demand from, of course, data centers. Nintendo's shares slumped after it announced the Switch 2 price jump and provided a diminished sales forecast in its earnings report. Nintendo's new earnings project lower sales and profits for its next fiscal year. In fiscal year 27, Nintendo expects to sell 16.5 million units, a decrease of 16.9%. The company expects Switch sales to decline from 3.8 million to 2 million. Nintendo said the expected decline in Switch 2 sales is due to what they call strong launch year sales and price revisions, but also said, quote, we believe this represents a solid level of adoption for Nintendo Switch 2 in its second year after launch, end quote. As far as total sales volume, the Switch 2 has a long way to go to catch up to the original Switch, which did unbelievable numbers, sold over 155 million units for the original Switch since its launch in 2017. But for now, add the Switch 2 to the list of things that are getting more expensive, in particular consoles. Where with the PS5 Pro, if you had a disk drive to it, you're over $1,000 now. Finally, an update to the router's ban story. The FCC won't let me be, or let me broadcast internet wirelessly or something. The FCC has an update to the router's ban, where they're extending the timeline for security updates on existing routers. Tom's Hardware ran a headline we think inaccurately representing this as, quote, FCC reverses course, end quote, but that isn't what's happening. The course is not reversed. They're still banning the routers. So if you just read the headline and kept scrolling, that's not what's happening here. There's one exception to that, which is that they have also banned hotspots. It's like they've gone further on the course. They haven't reversed it. The only thing that's changed here is that the firmware update window has extended to 2029. Nothing else has changed. Routers still face the same ban. Hotspots were added to the ban. There is no course reversal here. Ars Technica wasn't much better, saying that the FCC is, quote, relenting a bit, end quote, on its rules. Only pointing this out because I don't want people to drop their guard on this because they think the course is, like, reverses course to me means oopsie doopsie, never mind, routers aren't banned. That's not what happened here. Anyway, what actually happened is that the FCC posted a public notice on May 8th, and the notice writes, quote, the Federal Communications Commission's Office of Engineering and Technology, or OET, announces that waivers issued in January and March public notices of certain prohibitions of the regulation will be extended until at least January 1st, 2029. OET also announces that these waivers will be expanded to include a waiver on analogous class 2 permissive changes involving software and firmware updates that mitigate harm to consumers. Under this waiver, all uncrewed aircraft systems, which is drones, drone critical components, and routers produced in a foreign country that were authorized for use in the U.S. prior to these devices being added to the covered list, i.e. banned, may at least until January 1st, 2029, consistent with the FCC rules, continue to receive software and firmware updates that mitigate harm to U.S. consumers. OET believes that the reasons given to waive these prohibitions and the two prior waivers continue to apply not just until January 1st, 2027, or March 1st, 2027, but at least until January 1, 2029. The continued limited duration of this waiver, which will also give the Commission an opportunity to consider a rulemaking on this subject, also reduces potential harm to the public interest, end quote. I really like that phrase, the reducing harm to the public. We're not going to eliminate it. We wouldn't want to do that. We just soften it a little bit, just a little bit less harm, not maximum harm. That's too much. We only want to slightly harm the public interest. Signed, the FCC. So the updates allow routers and drones that were already permitted to receive updates as of December last year to continue to receive updates instead of until 2027, now until 2029. Doesn't change anything else. So Netgear also was granted approval for sale into the U.S. after a substantial lobbying effort. I saw another headline that was like, Netgear approved for some reason. The reason is money. Like, it's not a mystery what the reason was. It's money. Netgear lobbied the fuck out of the government and made a lot of political contributions while also dragging its competitors. So we covered that in our first routers piece, but that's the situation right now. So that's the routers. That's where we're at. But anyway, that's it for this news roundup. Thanks for watching. As always, subscribe for more. You can go to store.gamersnexus.net to support us directly, or patreon.com/gamersnexus. Keep an eye out for the Bamboo Lab piece. Again, personally, it's not, you know, this isn't an us thing. This is a much bigger issue. But just personally, as a consumer, it's like, it's just really frustrating. The quality of the hardware we've been happy with, but I'm super excited to see what Prusa has to offer because we just ordered our first printer from them and that should be coming in like 3 to 5 days or something. So anyway, we'll be checking it out and see if it looks like we can just switch to that long term instead. But that's it for this one. Check back for more. We'll see you all next time.